I've always been the type to go all in. When I get into something, whether it's fitness, food, or just following every twist and turn of the season, I want to explore every angle. That's why Prime is such a game changer. It's not just fast delivery, though getting a new cookbook or resistance bands the next day definitely helps. It's also the deep dives on Prime Video, the playlists that match my mood on Amazon Music, and the way all of it comes together to keep me going. What I've learnt is this: Prime isn't just a service, it's a hub, a place where my interests, old and new, can live and grow. From race day rituals to everyday obsessions, Prime helps me get more out of whatever I'm into, and even shows me what's next. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into. amazon.com/prime.
Picture this. You're halfway through a DIY Carfix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom, you realize you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything. Brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need. And it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need, at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit, every time. eBay. Things. People. Love.
Hello everyone, welcome to F1 Explains. My name is Christian Hugill and this is the podcast that exists to put your questions to Formula One experts. We're here in the F1 paddock and this is a special episode where we put your quickfire questions about Formula One driving to a Formula One driver. You can see where we've gone with it. It's a logical succession. Namely, that Formula One driver on this episode is GP2 champion, Formula E champion, former McLaren F1 driver and current Aston Martin reserve driver, Stoffel Vandoorne. Stoffel, welcome back to F1 Explains. Lovely to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
We're here at Aston Martin up on the balcony of the hospitality building here in the paddock. It is a little windy, isn't it?
It is. It's very, very like Zandvoort. We're close to the beach. As Eve is actually rescuing some plants falling down.
Eve, who works for Aston Martin, is literally rescuing fallen plant pots. You've got to make the best of it in Formula One, haven't you? And we're making the best of it. We're making the best of our conditions. We're carrying on.
Yeah, we definitely are. But we're here in Zandvoort. It's by the coast, so it's quite normal that it's going to be a little bit windy. But this weekend especially looks like quite extreme. So definitely going to be challenging for the drivers out there.
Extra wind as we're recording this episode. Now, if you want to send us a question, it's f1explains@f1.com. Stoffel, we have listeners from all over the world who do that. And you've actually, we were saying just before we started recording, answered some of those questions before. You were on one of our very early episodes that dived into the world of simulators, something we still get asked a lot of questions on. Stoffel, we had feedback. I know you drivers like your feedback. Craig in Maryland in the USA said, I learned so much from that episode. The capabilities of the astounding technology and how the teams use it, including in real time during race weekends, was enlightening and had no idea. And Alejandra says, amazing episode. Thank you. Lovely to hear from Stoffel. So there
That's
you go.
Good.
People liked it, Stoff, which is good
That's
news.
That's great. Always good to hear.
Always good to hear. On that episode, we had a second presenter. We're running a one presenter setup this weekend, but we do have a voice note from presenter two, Katie Osborne in the USA. Take it away.
Hello, Christian and Stoffel. I'm so sorry that I can't be there today, but it is a great chance for me to redeem myself from the first time I sent a voice note here into F1 Explains just about a year ago, actually. I got really nervous, and so I'm going to be a lot more confident this time around. So Stoffel, I want to ask you about a test you did earlier this year. You might remember you were driving at Spa, your home track in Belgium, and you were testing tires for Pirelli. What was the purpose of that test? And for kicks, a second question. I'd love to know if driving that real car helps you when you get into the simulator next time. Thank you for being on the show, Stoffel. Christian, thanks for holding down the fort, you and producer Chris, and to all of our F1 Explains community. We appreciate you listening each and every week.
There you go, Stoffel. Are we allowing Katie two questions, do you think?
Yeah, we are.
we're being generous.
we'll get to it. No, it was a Pirelli test, so obviously The test is kind of fully dedicated for tire testing, mainly for next year's tires, so the 2025 compounds and constructions. As a team, we don't know exactly what those evolutions are, but that's why we're going testing, to provide feedback to Pirelli, basically. So it was 2 days of running, a lot of laps covered, a lot of different compounds tested, a lot of different specs tested as well. And basically Pirelli is asking us drivers and teams to provide them with some feedback, what is better than the current spec, what is worse, so they can keep improving and keep evolving the tires for next season and get them in good shape, let's say.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we obviously focus so much as Formula One fans on teams and drivers improving their performance, but even people like Pirelli, who you sort of wouldn't think as obviously, they're looking to improve their performance, work what they need to do, and it's great that the teams can help out with that.
Yeah, no, it definitely is, and it's Formula One is a big data driven sport, so it goes both ways. It's not only data for the engineers, it's for everyone, it's for drivers, for whoever needs the access to that. So we're, as a team, we have a lot of resources, we have a lot of people overlooking the performance. And what was great in Spa is that the team had a good experience from the race weekend, so we have a great set of data from the race weekend already, and then having 2 days of testing straight after that is very useful to really spot the differences there are.
And we spoke to you last time you were on the pod about simulators. When you jump back in the car, does it help when you next get into the sim?
It definitely does, because as a reserve driver, you really don't get a lot of opportunities to drive the real car. And last year I drove in Spa as well, but it was a day full of rain, so I didn't really get the proper experience. This year was a little different. I had 2 days in the car, and I had a full day in the dry, and then the second day was a little bit drizzling, so I really had every condition to test in. But it's great for me to go back to the simulator and then improve the correlation on that side as well, because I usually start the year with a lot of laps in the simulator and trying to give feedback, but when you've not actually driven the real car, it's very hard to know whether that feedback is 100% correct or not. So now I've had that taste of the real car, and I've been back in the simulator already to give some comments about what we have to improve.
It must be really nice and helpful as well, because looking briefly at the role of a reserve driver, when you're currently sat here with me enjoying a coffee, recording a podcast, it's quite possible today, you don't know that today we're recording this episode of F1 Explains on a Friday. At the Dutch Grand Prix in 2023, there was an example where one of your equivalents at RB, Liam Lawson, had to jump in to replace Daniel Ricciardo last minute. You know, that could happen at any point across a Grand Prix weekend, couldn't it?
Yeah, it really can, and it's that's the hard thing about being a reserve driver, is you pretty much never know when the call is going to come to jump in. So you always got to be sharp, you got to be ready. Usually the call is always going to be a bit of a surprise, because the teams are going to leave it as late as possible to figure out if their race drivers can race or can't race, let's say. So it always gets pushed to the very last moment.
And just before we move on from testing, which we were talking about a second ago, do you use a different car for that Pirelli test? Do you use Fernando's car or Lance's car? And presumably changes have to be made to that, because you're all different people. You've all got to fit into it.
We actually use the test car because it has a lot more sensors on it, which we basically use for the testing, to give Pirelli better feedback on what is going on with the tires. But basically all the cars are the same. They're all the same monocoque, the same chassis. It's just our own seat bucket that is made to measure and that is adapted between the cars.
You often see one car at the pre-season shakedown day, don't you, which often happens for teams at like Silverstone just before the main pre-season testing, where teams get a really select number of laps or number of kilometers to go and just check the new season's cars working. Do you know what I always enjoy, because I'm a geek, stuff, I don't get out much, do you know what I always enjoy in those, is the teams have one car, but like in this case, Fernando and Lance's numbers get changed super quickly. And it always, because as soon as you jump in a car for a test, your number's put on. Yeah. I always really enjoy that bit. Is that because I'm a bit sad?
Well, I think we don't really care about the number, to be honest. We just care about driving the car. But yeah, it's often during preseason testing, there's only one car, and it's sometimes a pretty busy job for the mechanics as well, because they have to change the pedal position, they have to change the seat, and it just occupies them for a little bit, let's say, if the drivers are swapping morning to afternoon.
I want to get onto a listener question in just a second. Before I do, I've been really distracted, right? I just want to just sort of pause the official podcast a moment, and I might have to ask Eve, who's with us from Aston Martin, for help here. Behind Stoffel, there is what looks like an actual tomato plant. Do we happen to know? Another thing I've never seen in an F1 paddock.
To be honest.
They look like oranges, apparently. Is this an actual orange plant or tree? Yeah.
It is.
We're getting an official nod here. Confirmation. There's an actual orange tree at Aston Martin growing actual oranges in the F1 paddock. The things you find in this paddock. It's astonishing. Well done, Aston Martin. They think of everything, right?
And then there's some herbs here as well, you know.
Oh, there's some herbs. This is thyme, isn't it?
We keep going on plants.
We've got oranges and thyme growing at Aston Martin. That's fantastic. Brilliant. Anyway, the things you find in the F1 paddock never fails to amaze me. Right, let's get back on topic. Apologies. This is Laura in Belgium. Laura says, I'm a new F1 fan since I watched Drive to Survive in the summer. I'm also a big fan of this podcast. That's very kind, Laura. We're a big fan of you. And since I'm new to F1, I was wondering if you could please explain the overtaking rules in an episode. I tried Googling the rules, but it's pretty complex to me. That's why people listen to this stuff. And if they can't find the answer on Google, they come to us. Stoffel, are there rules about overtaking?
There are. I would say it's pretty open, because overtaking is a bit of an art as well. Let's say, you know, you need to be quite dynamic and quite you kind of prepare for an overtake sometimes as well. But if you are the car ahead being overtaken, there is certain things you can do and you can't do. I think one thing that a lot of the drivers talk about is moving under braking. That's
a contentious topic, isn't it?
Yes, it's a big topic, and it's something that really upsets the driver behind that is trying to overtake, because the driver behind is usually committing to an overtaking move, braking very late and going on the inside or the outside of a car. And if that car ahead is suddenly moving, it's really off-putting, and it can cause sometimes a big accident as well. So we're only allowed to kind of move once, and then you can move back a little bit onto the racing line, but you always have to leave the space for the other car. So that's kind of one of the big things to take into consideration. Obviously, people don't like to see contact, so contact needs to be avoided between cars. I mean, sometimes there is a little bit of rubbing, but rubbing is racing as well. So that's what comes with it sometimes. And then there's also the yellow flags. I mean, yellow flag means you can't overtake. There's, you know, probably some danger on track, a car maybe spun off. So they just use that to neutralize the race, to make sure that no other incident happens during that corner.
There is also some guidelines. There's a document called the International Sporting Code. Stoffel, are you aware of its work? Have you read it cover to cover? Does one exist on your bedside table at home?
Yeah, I read it every night. Dream about it. Yeah.
Excellent, yes. It's published by the FIA, the Formula One's rulemaking body. And it's not possible for a document, and it is a fabulous document, but even this document can't cover every single overtaking example. But the code does lay out sort of general principles. For example, more than one change of direction, as Stoffel was just saying, to defend a position isn't permitted. And any driver moving back towards the racing line, having earlier defended their position offline, should leave at least one car width between their own car and the edge of the track on the approach to the corner. And stuff, we see this in action, don't we? I mean, there's been a couple of examples this year with Max Verstappen and Lando Norris battling.
Austria was a very good example of that. Yep.
Austria was a perfect example of that. Of course, you're not, the reality is, and you're not, you're sort of thinking about rules as you're racing, aren't you? But also, you're racing, you know, you're not thinking about the International Sporting Code Clause B, Paragraph 2, you know. So it must be a fine balance between thinking, hang on, I've got to stick to the rules, and also, I want to win.
Yeah, you're not really thinking about the rules too much when you're racing, but you try to respect your opponent, basically, and I think that's the main thing, is that you don't crash into each other. You try and be respectful for each other. And what happened in Austria between Max and Lando was obviously very hard racing. And I think that whole situation got a little bit overblown because of the outcome, let's say, because, you know, they both touched. It was a very small touch, but they both had punctures, and it ended up looking very dramatic for what was just very hard racing between them.
And I can say this here at Aston Martin, safe space, isn't it? Good bit of drama. We all like a bit of drama, don't
Everyone
we?
Everyone loves it.
It was good fun. Jackson. Hello, Jackson. He has a question about brakes. Jackson says, I want to ask a driver. Stoffel is our driver. How do you know when to start braking when you approach a corner? Do you just sort of feel it, or do you use something on the track as a marking on when to start? Stoff, when on earth do you brake?
Well, it's a little bit of both. So a big part of it is feeling, and another part of it is we give ourselves references on the track. So often around the track you will see the braking markers, which are the distance boards to the corners. So that'll be the 50, the 100, the 150 meter board as that we would generally use as references. Obviously, every corner is different. Every approaching speed into corners is different. Some corners are tighter than others, and those references change from corner to corner as well. But big part of that goes on feeling. We obviously practice in the simulator before we get to the track as well, so we kind of create those references there. I would say, especially when it's like mixed conditions and you know, the track starts to become wet, then a lot of it comes down to feeling, and you can't rely on your kind of physical references anymore.
Well, on that, Mika Häkkinen was on this podcast last year. He's been on a few times, a two-time F1 world champion. And Mika said to me a brilliant thing, that one weekend at Monaco, he'd used a boat on a particular corner as his braking reference for the entire weekend. He goes out on the formation lap of race day, the boat moved. So it's like, that was my reference point for that break. It's quite a unique problem to Monaco. And while boats are fairly unique to Monaco, something that isn't is the start. That's a sort of lottery wherever you go around the world. When you've got a full tank of fuel, when you've got cold tyres, how do you judge a braking point going into turn one? Because that's unique to the rest of the race, isn't it? Nothing will ever feel like that point of the race again, will it?
Yeah, it's very tricky, and probably the most challenging part one of the most challenging parts of the weekend, because you have 20 cars around. I mean, it obviously depends a little bit on where you start on the grid. I mean, when you're on pole position, it's, you know, a little bit clearer into turn one. And really the way to practice for that is after the free practice sessions during the weekend. They have this thing called practice start. So everyone gets to go around and they get to do a practice start on the grid. And that's a great opportunity for the drivers to kind of, you know, start from a very low speed or start from zero, basically, on the starting grid, and have the approach in turn one where they can kind of practice their braking point. Of course, come Sunday, you'll suddenly have 20 cars around you, so that braking point is going to vary a lot. And then it's really driving on instinct. You have to really see what drivers around you are doing. People are, you know, moving left, right, everywhere. So you just have to be very dynamic and really try to position your car in the best way possible.
This is F1 Explains. We're with Stoffel Vandoorne at Aston Martin, and we are asking a Formula One driver, and we'll be back in just a second.
I've always been the type to go all in. When I get into something, whether it's fitness, food, or just following every twist and turn of the season, I want to explore every angle. That's why Prime is such a game changer. It's not just fast delivery, though getting a new cookbook or resistance bands the next day definitely helps. It's also the deep dives on Prime Video, the playlists that match my mood on Amazon Music, and the way all of it comes together to keep me going. What I've learnt is this: Prime isn't just a service, it's a hub, a place where my interests, old and new, can live and grow. From race day rituals to everyday obsessions, Prime helps me get more out of whatever I'm into, and even shows me what's next. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into. amazon.com/prime.
Picture this. You're halfway through a DIY Carfix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom, you realize you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything. Brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need. And it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things. People. Love.
This is F1 Explains. Back to Stoffel in a moment, but I just wanted to remind you that we're getting closer to our live show at the US Grand Prix in Austin, Texas. Katie and I will be on the Circuit of the Americas amphitheatre stage on the Saturday evening, 6:15, after F1 qualifying. And I'm very excited to tell you about one of the guests who will be joining us. The current Ferrari Academy driver, 2025 Haas F1 driver, and 2024 F1 Super Sub, Ollie Behrman. We can't wait to do the show with Ollie. If you've got any questions for him, send them to us, especially if you'll be at the track. We might be able to make you part of the show. Our email address is f1explains@f1.com. If you'll be at the race, please come and see us. We would love to meet you. And watch this space, or a different space, I don't know how it works, for another live show. Now, I can't say too much at the moment because I will get told off by producer Chris, but all I can say is the F1 Explains team is going to be in Washington, D.C. for the Mexico City Grand Prix weekend. That's October the 26th and October the 27th. So if you like our podcast, if you live in the D.C. area, if you're maybe looking for somewhere to watch the race, or if you could make it to D.C. that weekend, keep listening. More news on that's coming very soon. Of course, F1 Explains is an official F1 podcast, so you should check out the others too. F1 Beyond the Grid for in-depth interviews with F1's biggest stars, and F1 Nation for race reviews, previews, and all the latest news. You can find F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Nation on your podcast app and the F1 YouTube channel. Plus, you can download the official F1 app and follow us on social media. Right, hope to see you at one of those live shows soon. Let's get back to Stoffel. We're here at Aston Martin in the Formula One paddock. In front of us, we can see flags waving in some fairly noticeable wind. It's the wind's up here this weekend. We can also see the grandstand starting to fill up in front of us. We can see a big screen showing F1 Academy cars out on track. And behind us, we've got tyne plants and an orange tree, which I think is fantastic. Stoffel, if you had to choose one, a tyne plant or an orange plant, which would you take home?
Tyne.
Tyne, really? Why is that?
It just looks easier for maintenance.
It does. I'm terrible with houseplants. I kill them all the time. I'm
never home, so every plant that comes into my home dies.
I sort of went into my houseplant era, and then you go on the road, and it's terrible. Anyway, we might do an F1 Explains on how to look after houseplants. Producer Chris is shaking his head. Right, fine. Okay, we'll move on. Let's get back to talking about Formula One, shall we? It's an official Formula One podcast, so we should. We've had a voice note already from Katie Osborne, my co-presenter. Here's another one from an actual listener.
Hi, Katie, Christian. Love the podcast. I'm curious why it's advantageous during qualifying for cars to follow each other to gain an advantage, but during a race, it becomes disadvantageous to follow a car for multiple laps. Please explain.
Good question from Todd, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a question mark about how close you want to be compared to your competitor. In qualifying, often you don't want to be too close because the cars lose downforce as you get closer to the car ahead. So there is this thing called an optimum gap to the car in front, which is usually about 6 to 10 seconds. You basically want to be close enough to really benefit a little bit from the slipstream and the tow from the car ahead, but also far enough to make sure that you have the maximum downforce available on your car. So all the teams make kind of calculations to define what is the best gap possible. Of course, very difficult to manage on track, but there is usually a window where cars try to position themselves. Then in the race, obviously you're racing, so you're obviously going to be close to your competitors and trying to be close and trying to attack them as well. But sometimes it can really penalize you as well. Being too close, it makes your car lose a lot of downforce, and usually the airflow over the front wing is not as good anymore, which is going to make your car understeer. When the car understeers, essentially you're putting a lot of heat into the tires because the tire is sliding over the surface. So it damages the tires, and staying too close for too long might actually give the advantage to the guy ahead.
Is that where we get the difference between using a slipstream during qualifying on a straight? So take, for example, a track with a big long straight
like Monza.
You're going to tuck in behind and get the slipstream. But then you also hear in the race about dirty air that unsettles the cars in corners during the race. Yeah. Is that where that difference is?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you'll get the free gain on the straight line, basically. So you'll gain lap time on the straight line because you're close enough to your competitor that it's, you get a beneficial slipstream. But then that dirty air is going to penalize you in the corners. So there's always an optimum to be found, is how close do you want to be to still gain from the straight line speed, but to not lose out too much in the corners.
Stoffel, that's a brilliant explanation. Thank you. We're now going to stay in the US because Todd asked his question in Virginia. Richard's in Garland, which I'm reliably informed is in Texas. Richard, thank you for your message. Richard has a question about the start of a Grand Prix. He says, I just listened to a commentator talk about the difference between the execution of phase one and phase two of a race start. What does that mean, and what are the phases of a start in F1, and what's the difference between them? It's a good question, isn't it, Richard? Because may sound...
I didn't even know there's a phase one and a phase two.
Because this is another thing to mention. People have different terminology for different things, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the race start, obviously there's a lot of things involved in the race start. First, you have the formation lap where, you know, the drivers get to do a reconnaissance lap, warm up their tires, get all the procedures in place before they do the grid positioning. So then once all the cars are standing on the grid, everyone is waiting for the five red lights to come on and go out. Yeah, there's a lot of procedures during that waiting time to be done. You have obviously the clutch position, which is very important because, you know, that's what the drivers are usually practicing during the practice sessions, is to have the right target, because there's no assistance on anything on the race start. So we have to drop the clutch manually to a certain target, which is usually predefined by the engineers. That is, you know, variable depending on what tire you're starting on, how grippy the circuit is. So all these factors play a big part in that. And then there's such thing called the drive out phase. So that's really the moment the lights go out.
And now we're getting onto phase. I think the drive out phase is what
probably
the commentators would often refer to as phase one. That's the immediate, literally going from not
zero
moving at
to
all.
Moving.
Yeah, to moving.
Yeah. So that's basically where the clutch drop, it's very important to hit the right target, because everything is calculated on you know, the grip that's going to be available. And if you manage to hit the target right, you're sure you're going to, or well, usually you're in a pretty good shape, let's say, to have a good start. Then it's, you know, kind of all about feeding in the throttle in the right way.
And this is where we move into phase two. It's that now we're off the line, but we're moving up to speed. And if you've got a long start finish straight, you're going to be reaching what, 150, 160 miles per hour. That second phase of getting up to proper speed is sort of phase two.
Yeah, that's kind of the phase once you've fully dropped the clutch. And then it's really you're managing the slip of the rear tires, let's say. So you're kind of feeling how much grip there is available. And you're kind of gradually going to 100% throttle. Some tracks, that phase is going to be very short because the grip is high. Some tracks, it's going to take a very long time, especially in the wet when, you know, there's almost or very little grip available. That drive out phase is going to take or feels like it takes forever. So it's different all the time. And really is a kind of a bit of a feeling you have to create for it as well.
We are running out of time with Stoffel, who's got to go in just a second. But before you do, Stoffel, a final question from Luana from Switzerland. And she wants us to explain something about time, actually. She is asking about the rules around starting a flying lap in qualifying with only a few seconds left on the clock, i.e. the fact that drivers can start their lap before the clock hits zero. So Stoffel, why do they leave it so late? Luana also wants to know why some drivers bail out or slow down on a qualifying lap before they've finished it. Can you help us out with this one?
Yeah, qualifying, everyone always wants to leave it quite late because there is such thing called track improvement, track evolution. The more cars that drive on track, the better the track usually gets. And even being a couple of cars behind another car can give you a little bit of an advantage sometimes. So that's why everyone is always trying to push it to the limit to be amongst the last cars crossing the finish line. So usually you'll see cars crossing the line with only a couple of seconds left to start their final qualifying attempt. Some races we've even seen that cars didn't make it, and I think Monza is a good example of that, where we're getting back to the slipstreaming in qualifying. Everyone wanted to be in a slipstream. They were all kind of driving super slow on the outlap to try and find the perfect toe, but they weren't thinking about the time remaining, and then suddenly everyone had a hurry up, but some cars didn't make it across the line. So obviously it's more important to get a lap in than not getting a lap in. But yeah, it's, you know, sophisticated software tools that calculate when you should leave the pit lane. But then there's, you know, there's obviously the unknown when other cars are involved in it. Everyone has a different opinion or different thinking, and can cause a little bit of trouble.
Stoffel, it's been really fun talking to you. Thank you so much. How have our listeners' questions been? We normally get praise for them on this podcast, saying that they've done a good job with some good questions. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's good. I've learned myself. I didn't know about phase one, phase two.
Well,
on the,
you did.
On the drive
you just
out.
Called it a different thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to say we've caught out an F1 driver, but I don't think we have, sadly.
No, probably not. But no, it's fun. It's always nice to give a little bit of inside information to the fans. And you know, for us drivers, it all kind of feels natural, but from the outside, it's, you know, there's so much to learn about the sport. So it's great to have or to give an insight on that.
Does that mean you come back on again?
If you want.
Of course we want. Of course
okay.
we want. Stoffel, thank you so
I'll
much. Speak to you again soon.
Thanks.
And there he goes, Mr. Stoffel van Doorn, probably off to do some sort of engineering briefing. It's where you often find drivers across the course of an F1 weekend. And if you'd like to find yourself at an F1 weekend, you can. You can go to tickets.formula1.com. Tickets for Vegas, Austin, the rest of the F1 calendar are on sale. There are tickets on sale for the 2025 season already too. We are on F1 Explains at F1.com. If you'd like to send us an email, we might make your question a full whole episode on F1 Explains. We might put one of your questions on a quickfire special to the likes of a Formula One driver, to the likes of our friends like Bernie Collins or Ruth Buscombe. Huge numbers of possibilities for what we do with your questions, and of course we like them via the written words or the spoken word from a voice note, like we heard from Katie Osborne earlier in the episode. Of course Katie likes a voice note, as we famously know on this podcast if you're a regular listener. And if you like this podcast, do go and check out Formula One's other two official podcasts. There is Beyond the Grid for in-depth interviews with people from in and around the Formula One world, and there is Race Previews and Reviews with F1 Nation. We've got new episodes every Friday. Please do subscribe. Please leave us a nice comment on Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts from. And please don't forget to subscribe. It makes such a difference to us. And also, if you've got a Formula One fan, friend or relative or something like that who's just getting into the sport, do let them know about us. Do recommend us. You know, that the word of mouth does not make a difference for a podcast like ours. And we really appreciate you getting in touch and sending us your lovely messages. We read every single one of them and we really, really appreciate it. Right, we're back next Friday. Thank you so much to Aston Martin and Stoffel van Doorn. F1 Explains at F1.com is where to send your messages. And we will be back very soon on F1 Explains. Bye for now.
Stop letting mosquitoes control your outdoor plans. The breakthrough bug repeller from KillTheBugs.com creates an invisible 15-foot protection zone around you and your friends. Whether it's a family barbecue or a camping trip with friends, this bug repeller from KillTheBugs.com is a must, unless you love getting eaten alive by the buzzy flying creatures. Visit KillTheBugs.com and save 50% on your purchase of the number one mosquito and bug repeller in the United States today. Visit killthebugs.com.